You are about to enter the hidden world of the overlooked. Welcome to Now That's Not a Very Interesting Podcast, the weekly exploration of life's most utterly mundane minutia. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Welcome back to Now That's Not a Very Interesting Podcast, the podcast that finds the deep structural logic in things you actively ignore. I'm Craig Chapman, and today we are tackling the history of the traffic cone, the low-stakes, high-visibility, rubber-footed symbol of mild temporary inconvenience. It's a piece of plastic so ubiquitous it has become invisible, yet its very existence solved a chaos problem for early road builders. For most of automotive history, road repair was managed with the elegance and precision of a chaotic goat herding event. Before the cone, construction workers relied on wooden barricades, heavy, splintery things that offered all the invisibility of a damp sock and were excellent at causing flat tyres. If you hit one, you didn't just knock it over, you bought yourself a new alignment and possibly a tetanus shot. The first true ancestor of the cone arrived in 1914, but it was just a small folding metal tripod. It functioned less as a warning and more as a landmine for unsuspecting cyclists. It wasn't until 1940 that the modern traffic cone as we know it finally saw the light of day. The credit, in a moment of pure unmitigated genius, goes to a man named Charles D. Scanlon, a street painter for the Los Angeles Street Division. Scanlon was tired of having his newly painted road lines driven over, ruining his hard work, and, presumably, his lunch break. He needed something visible, portable, and crucially, less likely to damage a sedan than a wooden plank. Scanlon's initial design was made from rubber tyres cut diagonally. They were squat, heavy, and black, a colour scheme that, in a bizarre moment of misplaced optimism, he thought was perfectly visible. It was not. The key, however, was their tapered shape. It was stable when placed down and easy to stack when done. A small orange spark had been lit in the world of road safety. He filed a patent in 1943 for what he termed a safety marker. Before we continue charting the cone's rise from rubber obscurity to plastic ubiquity, let's observe the brief period of non-listening. Take this opportunity to procure a drink, and we'll return in a moment to discuss retroreflective sleeves and the two great flaws on the modern traffic cone.
If you're looking for a drama,
welcome back. We left off with Charles Scanlon, the man who gave us the tapered shape. Now let's talk about the glow and the flaws. For decades, the cone was simply rubbery orange. It wasn't until the 1960s that someone figured out that nighttime visibility was important. Enter the retro-reflective sleeve. Now, this is not a glow-in-the-dark feature, which would be too much fun. It's a precise technological surface that sends light directly back to its source. It's a passive-aggressive form of illumination. The plastic revolution of the 1970s was the cone's golden age. Gone was the heavy vulcanized rubber. In came PVC and other plastics. Lightweight, bright orange, and endlessly moldable. This introduced the hollow cone, which brought with it two key modern problems. The wind. A sudden gust is all it takes for a row of carefully placed cones to stage a dramatic, tumbling revolt across three lanes of traffic. And then there was the cone thief. The cone became an object of inexplicable college campus larceny. They are stolen for decoration, for use as temporary funnels, or simply because they look like they shouldn't be stolen. They are the most low-stakes forbidden object in existence. The cone has since diversified. The stubby cones for parking lots, the gentle barrel cones for major highway closures, and the flat, brightly coloured marker cones used exclusively by soccer coaches, or football if you are from the UK like myself. They all share the same philosophical purpose, to suggest restriction without enforcing it. Modern cones feature weighted bases, often made of recycled materials. This is an admission that the cone, left to its own devices, is an entirely irresponsible object and must be physically anchored to the ground to perform its civic duty. The heavier the base, the more expensive the cone, which explains why the cheapest cones are always found lying on their sides, like a miniature exhausted orange road workers who've given up on life. In conclusion, the history of the traffic cone is a steady march toward achieving the perfect balance of portability, visibility, and total or utter lack of personality. It is a monument to efficient boredom, and that, we can all agree, is an achievement worth noting. Thank you for allowing me to document the profound history of the negligible. And also, thank you very much for tuning in to a very exciting episode of Now That's Not a Very Interesting Podcast. I do hope to see you next week.
This has been Now That's Not a Very Interesting Podcast. If you have a suggestion for an even more uninteresting subject or just want to say hello, you can reach us at nowthatsnotaveryinterestingpodcast@mail.com. Please also subscribe, leave a quick rating, and share it with a friend. We will return next week with another fascinatingly uninteresting subject.